the budget of the Oregon Judicial Department. And before I pass it off to Robin regarding some opening comments, I wanted to make sure that everybody on the committee that's here at least knows that on May 1st, we are going to be having a public safety subcommittee hearing in Representative Cameron's district at Almsville Elementary School to focus on Head Start and to broaden the discussion of what true public safety is really about and how it includes prevention as well as secondary and tertiary options.
Just so technically, it's Senator Winters' district.
Senator Winters' district, too. I didn't realize that.
It's half of my house district.
Right, of course.
Mr. Chair, would you repeat, May 1st is what day of the week?
That is Tuesday.
Bring your ribbons and maple.
What time will that be?
That'll be from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
May 1st, 5:30 to 7:30.
Uh-oh.
On Tuesday.
Almsville.
Elementary.
Does everybody know where Almsville Elementary School is?
I'm sure Doug Wilson will help us, yeah.
We'll lay down the breadcrumbs.
All right, good. So before we continue on, Ms. Lamont, you wanted to make some comments and also call your attention to a memo that she's put in front of you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yesterday we had a brief discussion about the issue of mandated caseload. I've given you a copy of a couple of memos. I wanted to bring the issue back up because we're going to be discussing mandated caseload again in the context of the Public Defense Services Commission. It's unusual for us to be spending time looking at an essential budget level issue, but it's important both in this budget and in the Public Defense Services Commission budget. And the first memo really is important because it lays out the criteria and the reason for a mandated caseload adjustment, which I thought was important that the committee understood. Mandated caseload adjustments are approved for areas of the budget where there is no flexibility in or discretion in terms of whether or not funds get expended or services are provided. And the example that I would give is what happened when the budget cuts eliminated funding for Public Defense Services Commission, and as a result, cases were dismissed. The areas of the budget where this exists are the appellate courts, Department of Justice appellate, food stamps, health, some of the health care coverage. So it is a narrow definition and is strictly related to areas where there's a direct legal or legislatively adopted consequence from insufficient funding. And attached to it is a memo that I sent to the state court administrator in March, basically asking for information. And I provided that primarily to give you the case trends and so that you understood the background that this is an issue that has been discussed with the state court administrator and then by the co-chairs with the Chief Justice. So it's background information. And with that, I think that pretty much covers what I wanted to discuss.
Thank you, Ms. Lamont. Any questions? All right, let's get going. For discussion of policy option packages, could Ms. McKenzie and Ms. Gates please come forward?
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I was not sure if they had completed the discussion of program improvement options yesterday or the program improvement policy options, and so I listed it on the agenda. If, in fact, they believe that they've covered it, then I think that we could move to business improvement.
How would you like to proceed, Ms. Click?
For the record, Kingsley Click, State Court Administrator. The items that we did not touch on yesterday, we were going to bring back tomorrow to keep the out-of-town guests and presenters on schedule for today, which is with our new judgeships and our technology. But before we started with that, the Chief Justice was going to present his responses to the questions from the judicial compensation presentation yesterday. There were several questions from committee members. So thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon, Chair Shield, member of the committee. I'm Paul DeBunis, Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. I'll be very, very brief. Yesterday there were basically what I would describe as three main questions, and I've tried to respond to those with a memorandum. Chair Shields asked for information on Oregon judicial salaries compared to Western states that included benefits and retirement, and that is Appendix A to my memorandum to the chair, which is dated April 18th, 2007. I believe Representative Hanna asked for the medium judicial salary nationally, which you'll find at Appendix B, second page, and the medium judicial salary for Western states, which is at Appendix C. And finally, Representative Cameron asked about attorney salaries in Oregon, and I referenced in the prior hearing that I was aware of a recent study and by a very reputable firm nationally, Altman and Weil, and I have excerpted from that study the material referencing Oregon, and that's found at Appendix D. And I believe that those answer the questions that were asked yesterday afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to present that material to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Going to make a point that I think if
Representative Hanna.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're trying to find that section, it was under that tab 5 where the judicial compensation study went. If you were looking for the place to put the material that goes with it,
okay. Thank you. Ms. Click.
Chair Shields, we're going to resume with two of the policy option packages. The first one, just a brief overview on the new judgeship request. That's page 96 of the overview book, and also tab 7 contains the most current report from the committee. Jim Mountain from Harang Long Perry Ruddick Law Firm in Portland is a member of the committee, as was Senator Nelson, who isn't here this afternoon, but he's going to present the basic findings and recommendations of the committee, and then I'm here if there are questions in that regard. We have two handouts. One is the executive summary pages that provide the recommendations that are the whole report's behind tab 7, and then history of new judgeships approved since state funding.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jim Mountain. I am a lawyer who practices in Salem, Oregon, and in Portland, Oregon, and I am a member of the Joint Committee on Trial Court Resources. I am here to present the committee's report that you have in your materials, and I'm here to present the recommendations of this joint committee of the Judicial Department and of the Oregon State Bar. Let me cut to the chase here. The state of Oregon needs 13 new judicial positions. Now, before you faint or before you start throwing stuff at me, let me tell you that, you know, I have an appreciation for the need of the state for 13 new judges. There are competing needs, and therefore I come to you to point out to you that the committee and in those materials is a prioritization. And it's interesting that the top six prioritized judicial positions are located in six different jurisdictions across the state. Now, perhaps the best indicator of the validity of that rather copious report that you have is that this case-weighted study that we're presenting to you actually shows that some judicial districts have no demonstrable need for an additional judge. This isn't a report that has been submitted to you that's based just on the number of filings in the various jurisdictions and various subjective opinions have been formed thereon. This is an objectively, statistically valid case-weighted study that supports not only a showing of where judges are needed, but it demonstrates, quite frankly and candidly, where they're not. Let me just quickly review the process of the basis of the study, because I think it is helpful. This study, as I said, does not just count case filings. It classifies the various filings of cases. It classifies them into particular types. And then it weighs each one of those particular types of cases according to the average amount of time it takes to process that particular type of case. I think there are like 13 categories. The system then computes the total amount of time that judges have available to process their various caseloads. The system subtracts from the total number of judicial hours the time that's spent on administrative matters, and particularly east of the mountains, on travel. The system then computes what the current complement of judges in a particular district has in the amount of time to devote to a particular number of hours of work that's needed to be done to keep up with the filings. And in that sense, it's pretty straightforward. And in your reports, you'll see the figures at the bottom where committees like yours go to. You'll see the judicial demand and the judicial resources, all in terms of hours, translated into positions. And that's how, by pretty much simple subtraction, we do arrive at these figures that we have arrived at. And that's why I can sit in front of you today and say that the ARC Joint Committee confidently can assure this committee that Marion County really, really, really needs four new judges. I can assure you that Multnomah County really, really needs four new judges. Washington County needs two. Douglas County needs one. Josephine County needs one. And Crook-Jefferson, a combined judicial district, also needs one. Those are the 13 positions that Oregon needs. But as I said, our committee is practical. We know that we have to prioritize those because we anticipate that that's the first question you would ask us. When we come to prioritize, we do take account of circumstances in particular counties that raise the level of urgency of its needs, such as the construction of a new prison in a particular district would make needs in that particular district more urgent. The particular impact of a particular problem like drug cases, like methamphetamine use, that you will find in your report drives the request for an additional judgeship in both Josephine County and Douglas County. And the erosion of social services in an area puts pressure on the court, and where there are fewer social resources, social welfare resources available, programs available, the pressure falls back on the court to, in its criminal jurisdiction and in its creativity, to develop particular juvenile programs, particular family law programs. That raises the need for judges, and that's what's at the root of my pitch for four new judges in Multnomah County. And then just the integrity and of the system. After this committee has come before this body, before the legislature, and then this body, year after year, to ask for positions in certain counties, it does come to a point where you have to say, as we do for Washington County, for years we've asked for two judges to replace the pro tem patch that we've had in that county. And therefore, that's what, when you look at your materials and ask why is Washington County on my list, that's why. But my list is a short list. Like I said, I would prioritize those, and the report reprioritizes them in this manner. The six top prioritized positions that I told you are in six different areas of the state are these: one judgeship in Marion County, one judgeship, the number two priority, is in Douglas County. Under our system, the third priority is in Washington County, but the fourth priority is back downstate in Josephine County. Multnomah County, and its need is urgent, yet it is fifth in our priority. And then Crook and Jefferson, sixth out of the 13 positions. That's, in a nutshell, is our report. I will say this, though, and if the committee will permit me the courtesy of closing with my own personal note. It's frankly troublesome to me, somewhat embarrassing, to sit here and ask for 13 or 6 or even one new position when I believe that the position would be, in a sense, underfunded, in that the person who was elected to that position would be signing up and run and getting elected to a position that pays, as the Chief Justice led off this discussion today, an inadequate compensation rate. So thank you for permitting that kind of paid political advertisement. But in fact, that does color mine and the committee's work on this matter. But you have our best shot. Do you have any questions?
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mountain, first, thanks for the work you do with the committee.
Thank you.
I'm interested in how the committee goes about this process. I'm just sort of scanning through this document. And so you look at the committee recommendation. So I'm going to use the term, so the need,
yes,
and
sir.
Then the receive. And I'm going to use Douglas County because that's part of my district, so it makes it easy to talk about, and I can pick it out of a lineup quickly. In 97-99, you needed one, you got none. In 99-01, you needed one, you got none.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking you're down one still, right?
I mean, to be sure.
That's the math I'm doing in my head. Then in 01-03, 03-05, and 05-07, you don't ask for one there. What happened that would change that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's like we do go back every 2 years and start reinventing the wheel and do our recalculations and try and stay current on developments. know that the weighted case system really kicked in 2000, and then it was updated in 2005. So, Representative, by the time we were sitting there this year, you're correct. We did have the historic request of Douglas County. We did, under the weighted system, it justified that. And this is one of those cases, Representative, where the county did make a presentation, it did submit information, and it did demonstrate that the drug problems in that particular county had, as I said, driven up the urgency of their need. And that's, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what explains your question of how this time, why did we say one was correct, one was needed.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
I may not ask the question very well, and this is fairly new stuff to me, but I guess my point was, beginning in 97, 99, you ask in that biennium, you ask again in 99-01, and then for three successive bienniums after that, and both times you ask, you got zero, but and then three successive bienniums after that, you didn't ask at all in that county. I mean, I'm thinking if the need was there, it was still there, and then we just quit asking, or did the need subside? Am I missing?
No, your representative, members of the committee, the need didn't subside. I think what's fair to say is that its relative priority, in light of the business and the needs of the other districts, ebbed and flowed, and quite frankly, they get caught. There's a time warp in all this process, a representative. And the time warp is this, one of them is this. When we're assessing needs, we're drawing on statistics that are necessarily at least 2 years old, and if not older. And yet what we're trying to do at the same time, Representative, is prognosticate to see what the future needs are. And that's where we get caught in the time warp of trying to see what's coming down in the future. What does this data tell us about what the future needs are going to be? And what is this? But the statistics necessarily are based at least on some past events and past circumstances. So that, I think, Representative, explains why when we're going through this every 2 years, and every 2 years we are comparing it with the circumstances that exist at that time, when you don't, you will come to a time where a need is lower in priority than others, or you come to a time like we have this, where the need is still there, but it rises to a higher priority, particularly because of Douglas County's problems with drug cases and methamphetamine. I think your question is fine. It's probably my answer.
May I follow up one more time?
Please.
I'll leave Douglas County out this time. Whenever I look at a document that puts forth a need, and so that need was based on some research or amount of work that was needed to be done and that type of thing. So going back over that same time period, your recommendation or the committee's recommendation would have added 74 new judges. What they got out of that was 18, if we look at this.
Over
from 95, 97. I just did the totals by time period. So you would have added 74 new judges. You got 18. Now you're asking for 13 more. That still wouldn't put you up to 74. I'm just trying to, in my mind, I'm trying to say, okay, you had this need. What changed out of the need? Or even adding 13 new judges, are you still 50-some behind the eight ball?
Well, for a moment, I'll try and restrain the temptation to say,
okay.
Well, of course.
Okay.
Mr. can I interrupt here just a second, maybe just for clarification?
Yes.
In 97, 99, for example, Representative Hannah, you're saying they asked for 11 and received 3?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's still a net for 8 here.
Yeah.
So they're not asking again for, it wasn't that they were asking for 11 here and then 16, so that'd be 27 total. Is that what you're...
Well, I'm netting out the difference between the two for that time period.
Some of them are repeated. Chair Shields, Representative Hannah, mm-hmm. I may, just because
oh,
I've
may.
Been with...
you may.
through the years with the committee, and they have used a little different methodology on different and different bienniums for recommendations. I mean, there's the weighted caseload, and as was explained, it looks in relative need. But I can go back and provide the history on the Douglas. They have in some biennium only recommended ones where the county said they would provide facilities. And if they didn't give that assurance, they didn't include them in the recommendations. There were others where they felt like even if there was a need of 13, they should only ask for 5 and put in that recommendation. My recollection in Douglas was there were some changes with the types of case they were handling, but they also had a full-time referee that President Cruz had secured for the district, and that was in effect for a long time and helped balance out a little bit of their requests, and they may not have put in requests that, with that resource added in, made them need a judgeship in the same way that those that did not have any referee resources available to them. So I can go back and get the history for Douglas, though, for you.
I just use Douglas because it comes to the top of my mind. I'm just trying to understand the process by which you come up with a recommendation and then how it repeats itself, or if that, you know, if you wipe the slate completely clean after one biennium's request, which it appears now that's what happens. You make a request, you wipe the slate clean, come back and ask again.
And if, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I could have one more shot. You're correct, Representative. You know, it doesn't, the committee doesn't accumulate its statistics. In that sense, it does, you know, kind of wipe the slate clean and say, okay, in the picture we're going to look at in the last 2 years, what are the needs? And if you look at your, I don't know where, in our materials, in our report, it's Exhibit D. And Exhibit D is what otherwise looks like this huge weighted caseload study. But on page 1 of the
book. Behind tab 7, and then the appendices start at the end of that report.
So it's
D
right
is
here.
Probably about 5 pages from the end.
Right. And okay, so if you go to. Am I with Sabrina? I'm on page 2 of the report, of that appendix. And if in column 16,
say Douglas.
It says Douglas County. Okay, and then what you look to under the process that I described seeing what the time that the cases take versus the time that the judges have to process that. If you look down in column 16, which is Douglas County, and you go down to line 32, you will see that the figure is a judicial resource supply of 4.8, but the judicial resource protected demand is 6.5. Now that tells us that there is a basis for asking for 2 judges in Douglas County. But what we tried to do was be realistic and do some prioritizing. And Representative, that's why we looked to the people from Douglas County who did come. The court and the court administrator did come and make a presentation. And that's why, notwithstanding the fact that this study would support a request for two, this year we looked at it and said, well, you at least deserve one. And that's how they made the list.
Before we go on to Representative Nathanson, so looking at your prioritized list, that the top priority is the 3rd Judicial District in Marion County.
Yes.
Is it possible for you to walk us through Appendix D to show us the numbers on how they, I assume they'll have a bigger number somewhere in this mix than everybody else?
Yes. If you, on Marion County, column 3, if we go down and look at line 32, which is FTE, Judicial Resource Supply. That's, in a sense, what they have available is 13.8. If you go to line 33, though, Mr. Chair, you'll see that the Judicial Resource Predicted Demand is 18.5. That's a difference of roughly 4 point something. So when we look at that, we thought that
the difference between 18.5 and 13.8.
You're looking at Monmouth County?
Marion.
Marion. All right, got it. I'm with
okay.
you.
That's the difference between supply and demand. The point is that this study gives you a way of knowing that we're just not making this stuff up, that there is a valid reason for Marion County to make a pitch for 4 more judges. And then I will tell you that 2 things at least. When we look at those statistics, and then it comes, so they've demonstrated the need, but what are we going to do? We give them a priority for one, and I think they are our first priority. At least one judge in that jurisdiction is our first priority. And you can ask me why? Well, Marion County, being here in the seat of state government, is the forum in which an extraordinary number of cases are brought that aren't brought anywhere else, and those are the suits against the state. Those are a lot of the administrative matters that go even before they go to, or don't even go first to an administrative agency. They go to the courts, and they go to the circuit court in Marion County. Because of that demonstrable anecdotal evidence on top of the pure statistical showing of need, that's how we arrived at giving them first place.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, one last thing.
Please.
So the issue is the proportionality between the two numbers. That's what drives their priority.
I think the
spread itself.
It's spread, and then what you know about why there is a spread.
Chair Shields, and also not just raw numbers, but also proportionality, as mentioned. If you need one and you're in a district that has 5, you're going to get a higher priority than if you need one and you're in a district that already has 20, because it's relationship to your overall judge resource. And we have staff and a lot of information on the court, and be happy to come back and give a further breakout of how the committee does its analysis at a later date, if that works.
Yeah, no, I think this was helpful, just giving us a cursory view. Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make 2 points. One is, with regard to this document that a couple of representatives have been looking at in comments just prior to mine, the comparison of new judgeships, the history of recommended versus approved. As I add these numbers, the way I look at it is you can't just add the totals because some of those are duplicated requests. They didn't happen the first time, so they get requested another time. Now, I'm not a person who plays games regularly, but what I did was I took those and you cross out the ones that have already been requested, and it looks to me, even though I understand you wipe the slate clean and you start reevaluating what you need and put that forward, it looks to me there were somewhere between roughly 25 and 30 unique kinds of requests for counties, and they received 13. So that's the way I evaluate this document, and I'll share that later with other committee members. With regard to the charts that we were just looking at behind the page labeled Appendix D, the thing that I think is interesting about this is I appreciate understanding how you are advising us to look at the how to find the deficits. You look at the difference between the two numbers. When I think about how we need to deliver justice, justice has to be available in every county. And there has to be access for citizens to justice in every county. But when I think about how businesses or now public agencies try to figure out how to allocate resources and some of the new concepts with regard to just-in-time processing or flexible versus fixed staffing or fixed assignments versus flexible assignments. The thing that spurred this question or this observation to for me is the example about the Lane County Commercial Corp, for example. Sometimes there's a need or a resource available in one place. It doesn't quite match up to needs someplace else, and so someone can fill in. Or absorb some of the need at one time, and then someone else picks up the slack somewhere else at another time. As I look through that same chart, the four pages of it, what I did is I quickly circled all the places where there was a positive number rather than a negative number. 17% on whatever that is. Column 7. And then in column 15, Coos and Curry, it looks like things are sort of okay there in Coos and Curry. I look at Clatsop, and there's a positive number of 18%, 8% for Columbia. So anyway, I circled all the columns where there's a positive number, where things are looking pretty good in relative terms. And it makes me wonder, is there a different way of looking at satisfying the need with a more flexible view of how to satisfy the need over time.
I can hear this click. take a breath. Like I've got the answer. So I'm gonna. I'll defer to her. Then I have a quick answer.
Rivers and Nathanson. We do have a net, and there is also behind Appendix A subjective list of questions that the courts must all submit and work through that look at their efficiency factors, as well as we have a whole pro tem and a judge sharing program that we do statewide. And there is some, I don't remember if it's in the report, but there is a net figure for if you look at it. Some things you have to take into account are travel time and distances. We do quite a bit, though, with video conferencing and judges in Clatsop handling a case or a hearing that's down in Klamath by video conference. So we do look at a lot of those.
Okay.
I
probably should let that go, having been satisfied with that. But Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Nansen, when you look at some of those, I was going to say that some of those counties or districts that you cited, you know, are some of the larger areas that and so a lot of time is involved in just the travel.
Okay.
I did the same thing that I think you just did when you looked at column 7, and it says G H R S W W.
River Grant.
There you yeah, and Wallawa and Wasco, you know, Grant and Sherman. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about, you know, God's country. out there, and it takes a little. The judges that serve that area may show up in a weighted case study as being more in control of the demand on their services than others, but we know that they're spending a lot of time on the road.
Senator Winters, and then we're going to need to get going. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to make one other point with respect to the Marion County needs. You talked about the administrative as well as some of the appeals, but there's also a direct impact from this body to the judgeships and the need here. Because we have, you have the appeals, you have the initiatives, you have the institutions that are here, and the post-release. So Marion County, actually, they have screened for additional judges. If I go back to the 90s, and their workload is not one to where they can really control. Because so much is impinging on them from all these other points of entry. I think about the number of measures that end up that are passed that end up in the court system, and yet we love our initiative process, and but ultimately they do end up. Even the one we're talking about right now, Measure 37 in this building. So I think we need to keep those kinds of variables in mind when we're talking about judicial needs.
Mr. Chair, I couldn't have closed any better.
Okay. So I will close it. I've got a question. I'm not sure if it's for you, Mr. Mountain, or for perhaps for Ms. Click. I assume you've taken into account in this study the Judicial Department case trends that were on this memo. And so on this memo from LFO...
You should have a copy to March 12th.
March 6th of
2007.
I would not have seen it, Your Honor.
Yeah. So it says, it has filings listed here, and I assume these are from the department, of 611,946 here in 2005. And then, maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but it seems to me that the total filings on page 404 equal 881,505. Does anybody help me with that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we may be talking a little bit about apples and oranges. This, I've just seen this, and it talks about trial and appellate mandated. This report deals with trial courts.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is trial court data. I suspect the difference is that you've got a weighted caseload, and what is on the chart that you have in front of you is the actual, and what's on the judicial study is a weighted.
In terms of time.
Yeah.
Could you go back, Ms. Click, and to kind of take a look at that and make sure that there's good reason for that, and just get back to us before your presentations.
Great. Mr. Chair,
thank you very much. Nice job.
Thank you.
Chair Shields, our next presentation is on the technology initiative in the Chief Justice's budget. It's tab 9 is the full report of the strategic plan, and page 104, I believe, is where the presentation starts. Judge Dan Murphy is a Linn County Circuit Court judge, and he is also the chair of our technology committee. He is going to be making a presentation on this budget item along with Val Paulson, who's a Crawl Court administrator from Klamath and Lake and is also a member of our technology committee, and then Bud Borgia, who is our new chief information officer. If we don't have enough time to cover everything, we'll continue on with his presentation tomorrow. I know you have the floor at 4:30.
Yeah, I'm going to have to leave. Probably have to adjourn 5 minutes early so I can get up there. I've been promoted to speaker for this session.
You should give yourself an extra.
You're going to get up early. give that bonus?
That's right. Double the salary. Who would like to go first, Mr. Borchardt?
I would like to go first, if I may. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Daniel R. Murphy. I'm a circuit judge in Linn County, and I'm chair of the Technology Committee. And I want to thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk with you today about this. I want to focus on two aspects of the technology plan. The strategic plan you have in front of you is pretty lengthy, and I'm not going to talk about all of that today. The first thing I want to talk about is really kind of where we're at right now and why the technology we have is so antiquated that we can't continue to use it. And then the second thing I want to focus on is public safety itself and how this new technology is going to help us to do a better job in that area. The case management technology that we use right now was developed over 25 years ago. It is probably, as near as I can determine anyway, the oldest statewide case management system used in the United States. And when it was developed in the 1980s, it was great, but it's now way out of date, and it does not meet our needs or the needs of various other agencies that we work with. In 2005, then Chief Justice Carson recognized the need to address this and convened a technology task force. I had the privilege of serving on that task force along with a lot of other judges and court administrators from the state system. And in about 14 months, we spent a tremendous amount of time looking at our entire technology picture, as well as the technology being used by courts all over the United States and the federal system to determine which directions we should go in to become more effective and more efficient. And out of that came the original strategic plan from which the one you have is derived. Last June, our current Chief Justice, who's here today, Paul Domínguez, came to the committee and said, you've got a good plan, but it's taking too long, because at that time the plan was destined to take 10 or more years to accomplish. And he was right. It was designed to take too long. And so he said, we need to do this in 3 to 5 years. And he was right about that. The committee has since then been working very, very hard to make this into a 3 to 5 year plan. And that's what you have in front of you. The current system we're using doesn't have the ability to collect and manage data in a way that is effective and efficient and accurate to allow us to use management systems that will allow us to do a more efficient job of running the department. It does not allow us to support decision support tools for both management and for judges. It doesn't allow us to use a person-based case management system, which will allow us to more effectively coordinate cases. And it doesn't allow us to exchange information with other agencies such as the Oregon State Police, the Oregon Youth Authority, juvenile departments, district attorney's offices, Department of Human Services, and other agencies with which we need to continually exchange information and data in order to do a more effective job. It also doesn't allow us to do the kind of creative work that is necessary with the specialty courts, including drug courts and mental health courts and others, that are targeting some of the more complex problems that we as court system are facing and that our old way of doing things simply would not address. Now, with regard specifically to the public safety aspect of this, I think there are four central things that I want to emphasize about that. First of all, we need a better case management system and document management system in order to support the kind of decision support tools that I spoke about earlier. Tools that will both enable management to do a better job of utilizing the resources that the judicial department has, but also will allow judges to make better decisions about releasing people who are charged with crimes and ensuring public safety, about making sentencing decisions that will reduce recidivism, and about using specialty court applications in coordination with other agencies in order to more effectively work with offenders who have special problems. A person-based management system, which we do not now have, will allow us to manage and coordinate cases in a way that we cannot now do. We still have judges, even within the same judicial district, and certainly across judicial district lines, that are issuing conflicting orders, or orders that they don't know about the existence of other cases involving this same family or the same individual. And the only way that we can effectively coordinate those kinds of activities so that we don't have those conflicting orders is to have a person-based case management system.
Just a moment,
yes.
Your Honor. Could you maybe try to paint a picture for us and what that means? I think I have a
sure.
sense with between family court and criminal, it's perhaps, but if you could maybe give me an example of a case, a mythical case.
A mythical case. In a mythical case, on a typical morning, a mother may be before a judge in courtroom number 6, and I'll use my county as an example because it comes to mind most easily, seeking a family abuse prevention order to protect herself from allegations that her husband has abused her. At the same time that is happening, there may be a criminal case in courtroom number 4 where her husband is appearing and is seeking release from jail. The judge in courtroom 4 may not know anything about the family abuse restraining order cases happening in courtroom 6 and what's being alleged down there or what's going on down there. At the same time, there may be a child protective case in another courtroom, either in that county or in a neighboring county, involving the same family, where allegations or issues are arising. And one of the family members, either an adult child or a minor child or one of the adult's parents, may also be involved in one of the specialty courts like drug courts, where there are specific restrictions on their conduct and their contact with people, and that information may not be available to the FAPA, Family Abuse Prevention Act judge who's hearing the hearing in courtroom 6, or the criminal judge who's hearing the matter in courtroom 4. This family may decide to move next week, or part of it, to another county, and in that county they will not have adequate access to the same type of information when these people come before judges asking for changes in circumstances or relief. Does that
very well
help?
Yes.
A modern web-based management system and document management system, both the case management and document management system, will enable courts to rapidly and accurately exchange information with all of the various other departments and agencies that we need to do that with. And that's becoming increasingly crucial and important, not only for us to exchange information quickly so that we can enhance public safety, but also to make sure that we're all doing the most efficient and most effective job of what we're doing. And finally, specialty courts, as I've indicated before, need these enhanced abilities to exchange information because they're based on a team approach where there is active participation by representatives from various agencies. A typical drug court, for example, may have representatives from several treatment organizations, a juvenile department or a corrections department, perhaps the Department of Human Services, District Attorney's Office, a defense consortium, and perhaps two or three other agencies, all involved in this team at the same time. These people have to exchange information in a secure and confidential way to protect the identity and the confidentiality rights of the defendant, but also in a way that allows them to marshal this information so that on a weekly basis when these people come into drug courts or specialty courts for review, that the judge and the team has the information they need to effectively supervise these people. I want to go back. I skipped a little bit because I wasn't sure how much time I was going to have. So I just want to go back a little bit and emphasize the importance of having a system that will change the way we spend our time. We have our current system is so archaic that we are paying people, hundreds of them around the state, to do manual data entry hour after hour, entering little codes into a computer. I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to see OGIN, the system we use now, but it is extraordinarily archaic. It is a green screen that uses alphabetic codes. You don't use a mouse. You can't use shortcuts. It is a very, very old system. And we are paying these people to take orders and documents that have either been handwritten by judges or have been printed by attorneys in their offices and then entering all this information mechanically into a computer. The incidence of error, of course, is higher when you have to do all of this manually. It is expensive to pay people to do this. If we could free these people from doing this manual data entry and allow them to help the people who need help navigating an increasingly complex legal system, and if we could ensure a more effective and accurate entry of data through a mechanical or electronic means, then the information we have will be more accurate, the outcomes will be better, and we'll be making better use of the resources we have. So there really is an element here of efficiency as well as an element of being more effective. And finally, I would have to say that the public is expecting and increasingly demanding this of us. They're seeing these kinds of electronic applications in business and in other areas of government. They can sign on to the internet and renew their driver's license and their driver's registration and many other things in government, and they can't do those things with the courts. They want to be able to pay their fines. They want to be able to do all these things through the internet, and that's one thing that we need to advance for them. I'm not going to go into a big description for you of our committee, but I will indicate that I'm very proud of the committee that works on these things day in and day out. We meet once a month for a full day, but the members of the committee work very hard on various initiative groups throughout the month, every month there are five judges and five trial court administrators and several other people who serve on the committee. You'll find a listing of that committee at the end of the written material that I'll be submitting to you. And this is a dedicated group of people that have worked very, very hard to create this technology plan in a way that will most effectively bring us into the 21st century as a court system to serve the people of Oregon. Thank you. Any questions?
Questions? Representative Nathanson, Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is about the cost, not about the need or how technology is useful. I just would like some help understanding how this is financed. It looks like there's going to be a bunch of new stuff, hardware, but mostly software systems that have to be purchased. It's going to be a big ticket item, but it looks like we're borrowing money to do it.
Representative Nathanson and Mr. Chair, what I would ask is that you allow me to defer those questions to Sarah Gates, the Deputy State Court Administrator, and the State Court Administrator, because they have much better knowledge about the financial aspect of this than I do. I know what it is we need to accomplish and what it will do, but I can't answer very many questions about the details of the money.
Can I just let you know now what my question would be?
Sure.
For some point when there's time to answer it. The question is, what would it cost to just purchase it instead of finance it and then basically have to pay off a loan with interest?
Again, with your permission, I will defer that to those who can discuss it. Ms. Gates just told me a little over $100 million to just purchase it. In part, we don't exactly know, because to purchase it off the shelf is kind of an illusion, because you really have to tailor it to work for Oregon, and it's expensive to do it that way. So the plan, I do know that the plan that we've developed is the plan that we feel is the most affordable, but the details of how that goes work, how that happens, and how that finances would be better put to someone else.
And just so you know, there, I think it was in the governor's recommended budget, there was $20 million in just regular funds, operating general fund, right? And then $25 million from COPs. So.
Well, technically, it was in the Chief Justice requested budget, and it is unknown what was actually funded in the governor's budget, because the governor doesn't...
Just gives one number, right?
Correct.
Okay. Representative Nathanson, you have another question?
It would just be nice for me to know, because I think not only the committee members and the people in charge of the money, but for the public to understand, if it would have cost roughly $100 to buy it, just using a general number, what's it going to cost now that we have to pay it over time?
We don't really pay much attention to that around here. Being facetious, I mean, we end up doing COPs and debt on a lot of things that...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask our professional staff again to help us. I want to make sure that we understand, Your Honor, your presentation about the technology package is package 103.
I don't know what the number is. I don't.
I'm getting head shakes.
Apparently, that's correct.
All right. Thank you. I can come up with the math. That the first version of it was $47.5 million. The page 106 version, maybe you can help us through, because then we add in the e-court, then we add in the COP funding, and now we're up to $59.4 million. And yet we just heard a number that it would cost $100 million off the shelf. So I'd like to understand the comparisons here.
Mr. Chair, if I may answer the question, and for the record, Sarah Gates, Deputy State Court Administrator, Representative Hannah Chair Shields, we are intending, at the end of this whole discussion, to go through the numbers with you, but I thought I'd at least give you a quick answer so that we can head off too many further questions until later. The $100 million figure that the judge gave you is the total cost over the 5 years that we're planning to build the system. We won't be able to build it all in 2 years. When we built the budget in August, we had to make a guess how much money we would need to be talking to you about at this point in time. We were in planning. We were in very early planning of what we were going to be able to do in 2007-2009. The chief had just come to us and said, do it faster in June.
So I had to have numbers into the system by August. Not a lot of time to do a detailed plan. So we based those original numbers on the strategic plan that had been done 2 years prior. And those were the estimates at that time, and thinking about doing it in a longer time frame. Since that time, we've retained some consultants who are experts in the field of court technology who have worked with the department before to assist the committee with coming up with that implementation plan, the roadmap, if you will, for how do you get from here to there in 5 years. These numbers you have in front of you, the revised numbers, reflect that detailed planning. So in effect, what you need to be doing is not thinking about what was in the budget originally, but here's what the budget is based on the planning. And you did ask a question about how much debt financing was included in the governor's recommended budget. There, the COPs were included in the governor's recommended budget and in their plan for how much COP authority could be issued. And so I was planning when Mr. Borsche does his presentation that we can go into all sorts of numbers about that. But given that we have Val Paulson from Klamath, I would really like you to hear from her before the end of the day. Hopefully that answers enough of your question.
Mr. Chair, follow up. I'm fine to have the discussion whenever it fits into the schedule. I'd also like to understand, as we're looking at that cost, we also heard some testimony that said implementation of the system is going to free up some personnel, which in my mind there's got to be a pro forma somewhere that says we're going to free up enough personnel to save some cost. So I'd like to see that whole, that detail.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and there's also existing cost within the system now for running OGIN that should have become available to continue the operation of the revised system.
Keeping in mind that Murphy's Law always seems to go in with large-scale software development.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just want to say one thing to make sure that my earlier remarks are not misconstrued. It's not my expectation that the new technology would cause a substantial reduction in personnel costs for the Oregon Judicial Department. I think the difference will be that the increasing demand on personnel in the Judicial Department to do the kinds of things that they didn't used to have to do, to attend to the needs of protecting personal identity, to attend to court security, to deal with the increasing number of people who do not speak English in our court system, those kinds of needs are going to inflate or increase expenses substantially over the next decade. We can maybe mitigate some of that increase by using this technology. I haven't seen anything to indicate that we're going to actually see a reduction in overall cost of operation.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. Ms. Paulson.
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the committee. I'm Val Paulson, for the record. I'm the trial court administrator for Klamath and Lake Counties. I sit on the Oregon Judicial Department Technology Committee, and I'm one of the business sponsors for the Case Management System Replacement Project. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit today about the business drivers behind the request, some of the real problems that are occurring in the courts. I have to tell you, I represent probably one of the most fortunate courts in the state because we had an earthquake in 1993. And as a result of the earthquake, our courthouse was uninhabitable. So after 6 years of what we affectionately refer to as Porticourt, we moved into a new courthouse in 1999, and our facilities are really outstanding, especially compared with the facilities of other courts in the state. So we aren't dealing with the issues of not being able to plug in one more thing or risk blowing the entire circuit of the city. And we're grateful for that. On the issue of the business handling of the specialty courts in particular, we're going more and more to specialty courts, recognizing the fact that a traditional approach to handling some of the really complex problems we have in the court system doesn't work. We have fourth generation juvenile families. We have fourth generation meth families. And our traditional approach hasn't really solved that problem. So in 1996, we started one of the earlier drug court programs for adults in the state. It's worked very well. But it's very difficult for us to track and to see how effective we're being. We do track, but it's a very manual, intensive process. we had a federal grant for a period of time that required that we compare recidivism rates for our drug court people with people who did not enter drug court. So we set up a manual system which basically required us to look up the names of all of our drug court participants every month and see if they'd been arrested anywhere. We set up a system that we could compare our drug court participants with the people who dropped out of drug court and with the people who were eligible but never started. And doing that, we were able to determine, of course, I'm sure you've heard many times, our program is very successful. In the last 2 years, we have also started a juvenile drug court program. We've started a family court program that really tries to deal with the issues of dependence, of interrelated dependency, drug use, dysfunctional family. We have set up a program for a diversion program for high school students who would otherwise be expelled. And we're working on setting up a tribal court program to help us address the needs of some of the tribal kids whose needs really are not adequately addressed in our courts. Each of those programs is really much more labor-intensive than the traditional approach. We hope that it will be more effective. We don't have a good way to really track and manage that, to isolate factors that either promote or impair success. Our current case management system simply isn't that sophisticated. A new system, we believe, will enable us to isolate factors, obtain the management information, and just normal management reporting that will let us see if we're on the right track and make course corrections when we're not. The other thing that I wanted to discuss about the specialty court programs is that they are more labor intensive, and we've had one drug court grant over the course of time, but we've had very few grants. So we've carved out the resources from our normal operations, which is fine. We believe that that's worthwhile. What it's done, though, is completely stretch our staff in particular, so we have no additional capacity. We are looking at a very specialized situation that's coming to us. The Klamath Basin water adjudication was declared by the Water Resources Division in the 1970s. And as I understand that process, the adjudication is opened. People who have an interest in water in the region file claims. Some 750 claims were filed. Others have the opportunity to challenge those cases. And there were, my recollection, over 5,600 challenges in the 757 cases. Those work through the Water Resources Division, which hears the claims, hears the challenges, does the research, and comes up with a provisional order. Once they've done that, the case comes to circuit court, where the provisional order is subject to open. Anyone who participated can challenge the provisional order, and basically you can start all over again. All but 167 of the cases have been settled at the Water Resources Division. The last 167 are expected to continue to be processed. At this time, we're expecting the provisional order to be issued and the cases to come to circuit court early in 2010. My understanding of those cases is that it will involve a truck backing up to our back door one day and disgorging over 1.5 million pieces of paper. And 167 cases that involve multiple parties and highly contentious issues. The parties represent federal government in forestry, in fish and game, in land management, in Indian affairs, in various other guises. They represent the agricultural interests in the community. They represent the recreationalists. They represent the environmentalists. And the bottom line is there probably isn't enough water to go around to satisfy everyone. I'm expecting 167 highly complex multi-party cases to arrive at our court in about 2 years in a court with 5 judges and 37 staff. If that happens, and we don't have additional resources, then we will necessarily A, do a very slow job on the new cases, but we'll necessarily have to divert resources from the work we're doing now. We may have to look at curtailing some of our specialty programs. My preference would be to have the truck with the documents diverted to a secure storage place, hold out my hand and ask for the disks, and be able to handle these cases electronically. I'm hoping that we would be positioned as a pilot project for an electronic content management, electronic filing system, and electronic case management system. I think that would allow us to handle the workload, at least the staff workload, with a minimum of disruption to other ongoing programs. And that's my business driver. Thank you.
I found it interesting that in Lake County and Klamath there are a heavy emphasis on specialty courts. How many of the judges, or what percentage of the cases, are seen in a specialty court versus regular court or civil?
It's a smaller percentage. Chair Shields, my apologies. It's a smaller percentage of cases. In our adult drug court, for example, Lake County does not have the specialty programs at this point. In Klamath, our adult drug court handles approximately 70 adults at a time. Our juvenile court is just beginning, so we have now 4 kids, and we're planning to go to 10 for now, and that will stretch our community resources. Our family court, we have 4 families under active supervision. Our expulsion diversion program simply handles cases as they come up and kids who are otherwise qualified or threatened to be are eligible to be expelled from school. So it's a small percentage.
And I've also been interested in what type of treatment resources are available in rural parts of the state. And I mean, how does somebody in Lakeview stay clean and sober if clean and sober living to go to? I was hoping you could comment on are there clean and sober living environments in Lake County? Are there treatment facilities, or do people just have to go to an AA and NA meeting and do the best they can?
Chair Shields, we really don't have very much in the way of treatment resources in Lake County. We were starting to try to develop a drug court there, and we're hoping for CJC grant funds ultimately. But there was a glitch in the planning, and that didn't happen. There aren't really good resources. There are some treatment facilities in Klamath, and some of them will sometimes help with Lake County cases. But there isn't anything structured. There's not a lot of help we can offer. In Klamath, we have a history from the drug court program of working really closely with the treatment court. We did get some funding from CJC to help both our juvenile and adult drug courts. It's not enough, of course.
Great. Thank you. That's helpful. Any questions? All right. Thank you. We've got a couple of minutes left. How would you like to proceed at this point?
Mr. Chairman, to be cognizant of your time, I would be happy to come back and give you the time now, or if you'd like, I can start and then finish up at a later date.
That's great. And you're here in Salem, right? So it's not.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that would be helpful if we could break out early, because we've got to go to floor session. And so we'll. Hello, Senator Brown.
Hello, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I walked down here.
We appreciate it. This meeting is adjourned.